You are Locked On Jaguars, your daily Jacksonville Jaguars podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, welcome back to another episode of Locked On Jaguars, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I'm your host, Zach Goodall. I am joined tonight by a buddy of mine who works for the Locked On Podcast Network, as well as one of the big faces over at the Draft Network. His name is Trevor Sikkema. He is joining me to take a look at the three mock drafts that I put together and ran a podcast episode on yesterday for the Jaguars via the Draft Network simulator that he helped put together for the site. So, Trevor, really want to thank you for joining me. Welcome to the show. And go ahead and give everyone a rundown as to, you know, what all went into that and, you know, how much success that the mock draft simulator has seen so far.
No, of course, man. It's always good to link up with you, Zach. So I was glad that we could do this at least once before the draft rolled around. But yeah, the mock draft simulator, man, it was kind of a vision that we had kind of come up with for the site really early on, kind of even before Draft Network launched. This is something that we wanted to do because FanSpeak did a great job of doing their mock draft simulator. You know, they had the thing where you could import everybody's different big boards in there, and that was such a really useful tool, and we wanted to see if we could put something like that on our site as well, because, you know, they did such a good job and other people have done such a good job of really coming up with those things from scratch. And we knew that we had the chance to have some other resources of our own to potentially do that for TDN. So that's where we really got the idea of it, kind of the inspiration, where it's been quite the journey coming up with the algorithm for how every player is picked. There's all kinds of probability with team needs and primary needs, secondary needs, ancillary needs, all that kinds of stuff that goes into when players should get picked where. And we try to really make it as realistic as possible. And the best part is it's always something that we're trying to update, that we're trying to tweak, you know, as draft season goes on. It's draft season is very much a living thing. It's always changing. It's always growing. And so we tried to make that part of our plan as well for the mock draft simulator. We never wanted to say, hey, we launched the simulator in January, and then all of a sudden people are trying to use it in March, and they're like, okay, well, this, you know, this isn't really the same landscape it was before. So there's been a lot of work and a lot of tweaks here in year one, but we're super excited about it. It seems like everybody's really loving the version 1.0, I guess, if we're going to call it that, here in year one. But we're excited about how it's going to grow and expand and get even better in year two.
Yeah, and if you guys haven't used it yet, Jaguars Nation, make sure to go and check that out. I mean, like, this is a resource I'm using, you know, multiple times during the week, just at least for fun, and if not, you know, putting together fun podcast episodes like this and looking at all the different ways that the Jaguars could go about this draft. And, you know, sometimes I take it a step further. I look into their size thresholds to where, like, I really like Jonah Williams, for example, mm-hmm. and he does not fit what Doug Marrone typically looks like because he is a true length guy at tackle. So I try and incorporate it where, yeah, Jonah Williams is there on the board and I love the idea of taking him, but I don't really see it as much of a possibility. So where he might be the best thing to improve this team, you know, I go about it a different way. So regardless, I think that, you know, it's a really great resource for fans of, you know, every team out there to use, especially with the info that, you know, fans can use to then further customize it. But we'll go ahead and take a look at the three that I did. I talked about it in a podcast episode earlier this week. We'll do it segment by segment, going down the board, seeing what Trevor thinks as, I mean, the mastermind here behind this simulator, as to what he think these mocks come out with. Because beyond just putting the site together, Trevor's also a pretty smart football dude, pretty good at scouting, and he's got a good idea as pretty much what all these players have to offer. So the first mock we're going to look at was the first round, Dwayne Haskins at 7th overall, followed by Chris Lindstrom in the second round, Zach Allen and Titus Howard, edge and offensive tackle in the third round with their 2 third-round picks, tight end Foster Moreau in the early 4th. They skip the 5th-round pick. They don't have one this year. On to the 6th, they take Kendall Sheffield, who was injured at the NFL Combine bench pressing, but has the size and athletic ability to play nickel here. He seems to fit what they like in nickel corners. And then Gary Jennings Jr. out of West Virginia. He seems to be a bit more underrated of the two wide receivers coming out of West Virginia, but he's definitely got a fan base. And all in all, I mean, you get a third edge in there that the team definitely needs to add. You get a depth cornerback, but otherwise they really prioritize offense here. So, Trevor, how would you grade out this draft, and what do you think of the idea of the Jaguars potentially double-dipping a quarterback this offseason?
I think it's a decent idea. I certainly don't hate the idea. This is, I think, if my memory serves me correctly, though, this is probably the most unrealistic one.
Right.
Not in necessarily the players and where they're picked, but certainly it, like a draft like this coming to fruition, because they did pay Nick Foles all that money in free agency, and they even came out and said the reason why they did it is because they want people to believe in Foles, like he's 100% the guy, and
right. There
is nothing that will go against the grain on saying that, like drafting a quarterback at number 7. So, you know, would it be the wrong move? I don't know if it would be, because, you know, getting Dwayne Haskins in there, even if he sat behind for a year and learned from Foles and kind of honed his deep ball accuracy, which is really the part of his game that I think is holding him back, coming from such an offense at Ohio State that just dominated with athletes. Ohio State was just straight up more athletic than everyone else on their offensive side of the ball than everybody they face in the Big Ten. So Haskins was able to get the ball out of his hand to his playmakers pretty easily. And so, you know, that works for Ohio State. It works to win yourself a Big Ten title, but does it work in the NFL? I don't think right away. And so I think that Haskins would have a little bit of a learning curve, which he could actually benefit from. But even sitting behind a guy like Foles, Lindstrom there in the second round, look, if the Jags are looking to go interior, not sure if they want to go tackle, right tackle, we know that that's a need. Not sure if they want to go there or not, but you know, a lot of the top tackles are going to be off the board by the time 38 comes around. And Lindstrom, if they're going to be a team that wants to get their offensive linemen on the move, you know, if they want to do some pulls and some gap scheme stuff, and especially in their rushing attack, heavily leaning on Fournette, I think this year, Lindstrom's a great guy to do it. He's got a great first step. He's a really mobile interior offensive lineman. He really doesn't have that much of a weakness. He's not one of those interior guys where I say, okay, he could make the switch to right tackle. That'd be a little bit of a project pick that I don't think you would pick a guy like Lindstrom for. But if you're going for that interior offensive tackle, I like that. Zach Allen's interesting because I think that the Jags certainly need some edge help, but I don't think that Allen is enough different from what, say, like Taven Bryan is that you already drafted last year. I think both those guys are pretty good, like in a straight line. And I think Allen's a solid edge player, but he's not a bender. He's not a guy who's going to win with speed around the edge. And that's, I think, that really an element that I don't think the Jaguars have, or at least one that they would like to get more depth on. And so, whereas I don't think Allen would be necessarily a quote-unquote bad pick for them. Not sure he'd be the best edge rusher they'd want to pick. Tytus Howard there, you touched on them going multi-offensive line. So if you get a guy like Lindstrom, Tytus Howard's got a lot of really nice traits. I think that he does, and he's got a lot of upside to him. But Jaguars, depending on how much in win-now mode they think that they are, starting Tytus Howard at right tackle right away might be tough for him. He's a guy who I think would benefit a lot from being able to sit, being able to have a solidified offensive line around him, one that's got a lot of chemistry and certainly a good offensive line coach. It would just be tough for me to envision Howard from his level of competition getting thrown into the fire, especially in that AFC division, and succeeding. But then tight end Foster Moreau, I liked. He's a guy who's got a lot of tight end upside, and we're talking about tight end as potentially a pick at number 7 for the Jaguars. So I think Foster Moreau is pretty good there. Sheffield, I think, has the athletic profile. Again, another guy from Ohio State. And Jennings, he kind of fits the same mold as a lot of what the other wide receivers in Jacksonville are doing, is much more of a vertical threat. And so I think it's decent. I like the names that are there as players overall. I'm just not so sure that that would actually be something that the Jaguars would be pointing to. I don't know. Did you agree kind of as you were drafting this? I know you were doing three different ones and you were trying to assess it, but it kind of, is that the vibe you were getting? What do you think from these guys?
I definitely was as well. I mean, I've been a fan of Haskins as the guy here, and I know that they really did some research into him throughout the season and early in the offseason to where if Foles didn't work out, that Haskins was probably going to end up being their target. So while I think they do like him, I'm in the same boat as you. Is like, you know, I'll believe it when I see it if they really want to double dip at quarterback, because with that investment into Foles, these guys may have extended their like livelihood here in Jacksonville, and these guys being Tom Coughlin, Dave Caldwell, Doug Marrone, through their contract extension, which runs out after the 2020 season, which just so happens to be when Foles has an out in his deal. So they really have to, you know, go full throttle on this thing with the guy that they just gave the most guaranteed money in franchise history to. So love the idea of Haskins. Love the idea of giving him the Aaron Rodgers treatment behind Brett Favre, that being behind Nick Foles here, but obviously not as realistic as maybe some other options that we're going to look at. I'm a big Lindstrom fan. Zach Allen, I love the value there because I would see him filling in more as an heir to Calais Campbell, as the one gap five tech defensive end. He's not, I mean, Campbell's not as much of a bender as he is a home wrecker almost. But there would have to be a lot of development there. Taven Bryan moving back inside. You'd have two projects essentially playing defensive end and three tech right there over the course of time. It would be a value pick that they know would be a project. Same thing with Titus Howard. Moreau's a guy I'm a fan of. Out at the Senior Bowl for sure. No one saw that coming, which is pretty cool to see him come out and start making some plays at the Senior Bowl that he didn't get to see at LSU. And then same thing, like you said, with Sheffield. I mean, he's an athletic dude. Gary Jennings fits, you know, the style of receiver that they have here, I think, a little bit better than his counterpart at West Virginia, David Sills. So not as realistic as maybe some of these other ones we're about to get to, but it'd be fun nonetheless. And when we come back, we'll break down those next two. Today's episode of Locked On Jaguars is brought to you by A1 Sliders. Are you one of hundreds of coastal Northeast Florida homeowners who struggle every day to open and close your sliding glass door? Why spend all the money it takes to replace your sliding glass door when Tony and the gang at A1 Sliders could save you money and repair your door for you? A1 Sliders is licensed and insured. They offer free estimates, upfront pricing, and will help you save on heating and cooling costs in your home from leaky sliding glass doors. And at A1, your schedule comes first. A1 Sliders is a fan of the Locked On Jaguars podcast, and in partnering with us, they will give you $25 off of any repair you order, no limit. Just mention Locked On Jaguars before getting your repairs done. Call A1 Sliders now for your free sliding glass door repair estimate at 386-538-6835. Or check out their website at www.a1sliders.com. That's 386-538-6835 and www.a1sliders.com. And don't forget to mention Locked On Jaguars for $25 off of any repair you order. A1 Sliders, licensed and insured, LLC, covers the Jacksonville area from Fernandina Beach through North Smyrna Beach, based out of Palm Coast, Florida. Contact for more details on location and any questions you may have. So I ended the last segment by looking at it with maybe these ones will be a little more realistic. And you look at the first pick in this second one that we've got, and you immediately think, maybe it's not as realistic as we thought. But at the same time, what's caught me off guard in the past couple of weeks is people have started to talk about Quinnen Williams falling a bit. I don't expect him to be at 7, but before we talk about it from a Jaguars perspective, I mean, what are your thoughts on that? It seemed like a couple weeks ago he was a top 2, top 3 lock, and I've seen mocks several times where he's going in the 4 to 6 or 7 range.
Yeah, it would be silly, absolutely silly, if Quinnen Williams got below 5. I mean, I'm even thinking here in my head, you know, if Kyler's going to go number 1. So, I mean, you could justify Quinnen as perhaps maybe the best prospect in his class. So we mulled over that at possibility to number 1. That's not going to happen anymore. It's going to be Kyler. San Francisco doesn't really need his talent because they already have kind of a logjam on the inside with some tweener interior guys that are, you know, you're not sure how much your edge, how much you're switching over to a 4-3 as well. So you're not really, it's not like it's filling their biggest need. They could probably go Josh Allen, Nick Bosa would be better suited for what they might need. Two good talents there anyways. So now he's sliding to 3. Jets, I mean, they could pick him potentially. They've had a history of picking those high defensive linemen there, but they certainly need offensive line help as well. The Raiders and the Bucs, I think at 4 or 5 are basically where the Quinnen Williams slide could stop if he ends up getting there. I just can't see him really getting past those two guys. Certainly, though, this draft class that you have here, I think philosophy-wise, makes a little bit more sense in I guess, the realm of realism than the first one did because, you know, certainly I think that if Quinnen Williams is there, I don't care if you'd, well, we actually need edge. No, it don't matter. You like every team in the NFL needs Quinnen Williams, okay? So that's just kind of the way that it is there. That's kind of my thoughts with him. He was basically one of the best, if not the best player in college football this past season. So any team I think would be pumped to have him.
I totally agree. And a lot of, I'm in the camp that I don't think Jacksonville should go defense at all at 7 unless Quinnen Williams or Nick Bosa are there. then at that point it doesn't matter.
Sure.
Like, that those guys are as close to a home run as you could possibly get in this draft process. And like you said, that seems to be what they like to do. Tom Coughlin's got a history of just, you know, digging in with the trenches. And even if it's not a need, he wants to get guys in on the offense and defensive line. So Williams there, I mean, that's one of the two picks on defense that I'd walk away totally happy with at 7th overall. You move on to 38. You've got Dalton Risner coming out of Kansas State. I think he's a dude that in Jacksonville, they'd probably want him to play guard. Same thing with what I said about Jonah Williams. He's not as lengthy as Doug Marrone seems to like, because he's brought in guys like Eric Flowers and Cedric Ogbuehi, who, you know, just were turnstiles in their 4 years with their original team, and Marrone brings them in. It's not as much about the talent. It's that he literally wants guys that are 6'5", 305, 35-inch arms plus, or better than that. And Risner doesn't really fit that, but with the lack of, you know, depth at right tackle, you've got Will Richardson. You want to say that like he could end up being good, but you have no clue at that point. At least in Risner is that maybe you get him to come in and play guard, which I think is just as much of a need at this point. But you've got insurance that, you know, he's got the ability to play right tackle. So I think that versatility and availability, I think he played 3 straight years at Kansas State without missing a game, would be really important to them. Then JJ, I've always messed up his pronunciation.
Arcega-Whiteside.
I think is a guy, I admittedly haven't studied him enough, but I've seen some tape where, and I've seen you guys point out especially, he's a guy that is a contested catch monster, but he barely even has to jump to do it, which, is that concerning or is that dope?
That's a great way to put it.
I don't know the best way to put it. Obviously, you want to see him utilize that athletic ability that he's clearly been blessed with, that I would love to be able to have. But gives them that weapon that Jacksonville doesn't really seem to have. They've hit and miss on guys at tight end and receiver in the past to be that contested catch red zone guy. They've missed on it since Allen Robinson's big season in 2015. Dawson Knox is a guy that they've met with, that Tony Pauline has come out and said that they have reported interest with. Whether that's true or not, I guess we'll see come draft day. Will Greer is a guy at quarterback. You know, if they're not taking a quarterback in the first round, I think it would be a bad move to try and use a day one and two asset on a quarterback at that point, because you're clearly trying to build around Foles through your premium picks. Once you get to day three, you've got a guy that the team has met with multiple times. I watched a high-level scout meet with him personally at the Senior Bowl after already running multiple meetings with him. So you can tell that they're definitely doing their homework on him. That's the type of guy in type of time frame you start developing, you know, a back project backup quarterback that can turn into a spot starter for you down the line. Then Jordan Scarlett and Martez Ivy, two Florida Gators that I think would really fit. Ivy, you know, he didn't pan out as well in college as people thought, but he did improve in his final year at UF under a new offensive line coach. Same thing with Jawan Taylor. Fits the size profile, a former five-star, played a lot, has some positional versatility, played left tackle and left guard. And as for Scarlett, you know, there were some issues with his character concerns, but he came back. He's more of a guy that can win in between the tackles. Dave Caldwell said in the past, his ideal number two running back is someone that would not change the game plan whatsoever with what they want out of Leonard Fournette. And in comparison to a guy like James Williams, who you'll see in the third draft that I've got here, that's a true receiver back, I think they'll probably want to prioritize that after signing a guy like Benny Cunningham, who can catch the ball out of the backfield a little bit better than what Fournette might provide.
Yeah, this is a really fun haul for, I think, me personally, because these are a lot of guys who I have some belief in. These, you know, quote unquote, people are like, well, who are some of your guys? Well, I think a lot of these guys are my guys, I would say. So, you know, I'll just start. You know, I talked about Quinton Williams a little bit already. He was kind of the obvious pick. Dalton Risner's, he's great, man. I listened to him talk at the combine. I was at his podium. He just loves playing offensive line. And the longer I do this, the more that I realize that when you find those dudes that just love playing O-line, you got to draft them. That you've got to put them on your team, on your depth chart, whether they're starters or not. You've got to have those kinds of guys on your team, because that is a position that just gets beat up, that those guys are overinflated to weights that often their body can barely handle. They get no glory. If they block 60 great plays in a game and give up 2 sacks, they're a bum and they're trash, right? So it is such a hard position to play and to get up and be excited about. It really is. And Risner just loves all the dirty work playing offensive line. He loves the chemistry. He talked about why he plays offensive line. One of the quotes that he rattled off when we were at the combine, and he knew it immediately, that somebody asked him, hey, why do you play O-line? He's like, well, there's a quote that I always go by, and he said, there's nothing in this world like moving a man from point A to point B against his will. That's why he plays O-line, right? And so, like, this is the kind of guy that you draft. And honestly, man, I think that Risner's going to go higher than 38, and I think it's deservedly so. J.J. Arcega-Whiteside, he's a guy I really like. I mean, I see so much Marquise Colston in his game. Certainly, Colston had a great career because he was paired with Brees during his time in New Orleans. I'm not saying Nick Foles is Drew Brees or anything, but I would love Arcega-Whiteside in Jacksonville just because of what you said. He gives them a receiving option that they really don't have on the roster. They've got a lot of long speed guys who can stay vertical. Let's give him a short down. Let's give him a red zone guy. Dawson Knox then incoming him as well. Really should have produced more numbers than he had this year, and I think a lot of that had to do with Ole Miss's offense. They were clearly running through A.J. Brown no matter what. I mean, there's plays where Dawson Knox is literally just wide open, waving his hand in the air. But Jordan Te'amo, the quarterback's not even looking at him because that's not even in the play. The play is so spread out. It's run through A.J. Brown because A.J. Brown's a good player. Not saying he's not, but Dawson Knox should have had better production. I think his best days of football are in front of him. Love the Will Grier pick this late if you can get him this late. It makes total sense putting him behind Foles, seeing what you got out of him for 2 years. And then when Foles is, when his contract is up or when he's moving on or retired or whatever, you already know what you have in Will Grier. And potentially it could be an heir apparent. Scarlett makes a lot of sense behind a guy like Leonard Fournette and the kind of styles that they are. A lot more north to south guys who win with strength and speed. And then a Martez Ivy. I'm not a big fan of Martez Ivy, but still, I mean, you need to add offensive line depth. He's a guy who could be a swing player, so it makes sense. There are a lot of really good names that I like on this list. And hey, I want to say this too. Even if you think that Quinnen Williams is not going to be there at seven, if you put Brian Burns at the top of this mock draft and gave me the rest of this mock draft, I'd be doing backflips if I was the Jags. I really would. So that's kind of my thoughts there.
I also really like Brian Burns, and I like a lot of the defensive guys in this draft. It's just my take has been so adamant at this point that, you know, I do think this defense is good enough to contend. Yeah, there's needs at, you know, maybe they want to upgrade free safety, even though they seem comfortable in Jerod Wilson to replace Deshaun Gibson. Definitely need to add a third edge, a rotational guy, maybe an heir apparent to Calais Campbell at some point. It's just the way I look at it is the way that they've bought into Foles and the way that they've left off this past year after what happened in 2017 is that, I don't know, I don't want to go fixing something that's not broken when the offense is the equivalent of like D2 football to me at this point. I understand. I love Brian Burns and I love Quinnen Williams. I love a lot of these defensive players and they're blue chip players, and a couple years ago when they're still building this defense, like I am pounding the table for any of these guys. But you know what I mean, where I'm coming from that with
sure
on offense.
Yep.
You even know because you thought I was nitpicking a bit on Jawan Taylor's film the other day, and I went back and I looked at that, and I understood. I totally understand where people were coming from there. I'm not the biggest fan of Taylor at seven, whereas I literally would be later in the round.
How dare you? Even I'm just kidding. I'm totally kidding.
I know. but. Even with him, I would probably prefer to land a safe offensive tackle prospect in Jawan Taylor than defense at this point, if you know where I'm coming from. But that's purely looking at it from a need perspective, and I also know that these guys like to at least say they're going by best player available. So
also
I'm not going to be shocked.
Foreshadowing. It's also a little foreshadowing for this third mock draft that we're about to get to. So that was a good transition.
That's right. So we'll be back with that third mock after these messages. So with the first pick in this mock draft is a guy that, you know, if they're not going quarterback, if they are trying to build around Nick Foles, he's the guy that I'm pounding the table for here, and it's TJ Hawkinson. I watched his film, and I came away with it thinking, wow, like, this is probably, in my short amount of time evaluating tight ends in the draft as a whole, the best tight end that I've watched coming out of college. And I really trust Trevor. I really trust a lot of the guys at the Draft Network for their analysis. So I went back and I looked to see if I was way over, like, overdoing it with the love for Hawkinson. And I read every report and everyone said that they literally struggled to find anything that was bad about him. So I love that idea of a safe tight end in an offense where Nick Foles targeted tight ends 33% of the time in Philadelphia over the past 2 years. He had Zach Ertz on top of guys like Dallas Goedert, Trey Burton, Brent Celek at the end of his career, where, you know, he trusted the tight end to come and make a play. On top of that, the Jaguars love blocking tight ends. You're getting the best of both worlds in TJ Hawkins in the prospect.
Yeah, Hawk's great. I actually have Noah Fant as my tight end one, but that's just because I think the ceiling for him is a little bit higher. He's basically the same exact size as OJ Howard, but even a little bit more athletic. He's a guy who I think could develop as a blocker, and he could. I think that his ceiling is just slightly higher than Hawkinson's, but if you're talking about safe, Hawkinson's got such a high floor. I mean, it's so obvious. If you're picking this guy and you are going to sleep that night, and you're sleeping like a rock. You have no worries with this guy on your team. You're going to be so happy, I think, no matter where you pick him, because you're right. He's got a lot of mismatched tendencies to him. He can play in line. He can obviously do his good work as a receiver, catching through traffic, he's not as good as separating as Noah Fant is, but I mean, still, we're talking about two really great tight end prospects. Even though I'd have Noah Fant rated over TJ Hawkinson, I'd still think he'd be a great pick at number 7. I totally understand it for what they're trying to do. And it makes a lot of sense for Nick Foles too. You've got to be able to give your quarterback what he needs to succeed. And you have to also take a look at the kind of styles that are successful for him, what's worked well in the past. And certainly it's very obvious that a good tight end has always produced a good Nick Foles. And so I think that would be a great pick for Jacksonville.
Then looking down the rest of it, this one might come as a bit of a surprise for an early pick, but safety Nasir Adderley, if he's there at 38 after what's been, you know, not a bad, but not as great a draft process as a lot of people were hoping for with the hype of him coming out of Delaware, a smaller program. And yet you knew that this guy, he's got range. He can be an NFL free safety. It seemed like he was playing a little bit out of position at the Senior Bowl, and he didn't get to thrive. It's hard to judge safeties at the Senior Bowl as well. The injury at his pro day, it's not been great. If he somehow made it to 38, I really think the Jaguars would consider adding yet another real talented ball-hawking type of guy to their secondary to, you know, replace what Tashawn Gibson had to offer. Then they flip back to offense, take Michael Dieter out of Wisconsin. What an offensive line unit coming out of Wisconsin, but I've seen from the most part that Dieter ends up being the consensus best one coming out of there this year. Obviously the center, and I always mess up his name as well, Tyler Biadasz, I think, is the one that's gotten a lot of praise, but he went back to school. Tristan Hill out of UCF, my guy.
Dude
with absolutely no pass rush plan at all, but he's also, but he's a wrecker when he is on. Cause I mean, you saw it at the combine, yes. Not only in the actual athletic testing, but in the different drills, he just kept popping off with explosion and a lot of bursts, and would be a fun project when you've got two guys in Marcel Darius and Avery Jones ahead of him at nose tackle to bring along and eventually move on from one of those two in the future. DeMarcus Lodge, like you said, with Dawson Knox, a guy that almost seemed a little bit underutilized in Ole Miss's offense, but he's a guy that one thing that really stands out about him, despite him obviously being a guy that can play vertical, a guy that has won some contested catch battles, he likes to block. That's a requirement for Jacksonville receivers. That was a huge thing for DJ Chark coming out and what the team praised about him when they drafted him. They were sure to go out of their way to talk about his blocking ability. So Lodge ends up being a bit of a value pick, probably in comparison to what their board will look like. Brett Ripien coming out of Boise State, he's gotten some love in what is, you know, considered a bit of a weaker quarterback class. Kind of a West Coast kind of feel. If the Jaguars don't plan to do a ton of changing to their passing concepts, I think that he'd be a really good fit as another project developmental guy. James Williams out of Washington State. He's touched the ball over 500 times at Washington State. 40% of those were in the pass game. The Jaguars are missing that. They don't have the pass catcher on their team anymore that TJ Yeldon was, you know, provided them, unless they really rely on Benny Cunningham, who I think can do it, but he's been on a bit of a downstretch of his career over the past couple of years. So Williams would truly offer that dynamic receiving ability that they seem to have lost after losing TJ Yeldon. So I think this one ended up being my favorite, as it really did approach both sides of the ball, and yet at the same time, I feel found a way to make the offense a lot better as a whole. Trevor, what were your thoughts?
Yeah, so I mean, Adderley fits the mold of you know, the kind of secondary and the aggression and the swagger. Even you could say that they're trying to build. He certainly, him and Ramsey, I think would be boys. You know, one on the back end, one on the outside. Nasir is just such a ball hawk. He's got so much confidence to what he's doing. He's a guy who can go up and get the interceptions. He could play as a single high player. You're not going to want him in man coverage as a strong safety kind of a guy, but he's still got a lot of really great value as a safety. So I get that. Dieter, he's fine. I think he's fine as a Wisconsin guy coming out. He's a solid offensive tackle prospect. Not sure he's a guy that I'd want you to, again, we talked about this earlier in the podcast, start at right tackle right away. But I guess, you know, if you think you've got a decent chance with a guy who's already in there, maybe you bring him in, they can battle it out, see who has the best competition. I suppose you can get away with that. I like Tristan Hill, man. I didn't know anything about him basically coming into the draft process. And I think I'm with you. He doesn't really know what he's doing yet, but he is big, strong, fast, and is always working his butt off.
Do you know what that sounds like to me? That sounds like
who?
That sounds like Taven Bryan last year. Granted, I think Taven Bryan was a lot more poised as a prospect. That's what shot him into the first round, and also positional value of three tech to a nose tackle. But from that pure perspective of, you know, you've got raw burst in athleticism at your size,
yeah,
and that's what a team wants to develop.
I think you're going to make Jags fans mad because you have them getting a guy of that talent at 98. They picked Bryan much higher last year, but
yeah.
No, I understand what you're saying.
Yeah.
It makes total sense. And I mean, it could be a fill for them, dude. You know, a lot of people look at depth charts and they just go, okay, we got this spot, this spot, this spot, this spot. All right, there's the starters. We're all good. That's not how the NFL operates. It's just not. You've got to have a pass rush arsenal. You've got to have a second wave of guys to come in there. You've got to be versatile with guys going on inside and out with the edge and the inside and on the interior. You've got to be able to switch it up on third downs to get to the quarterback however you can. And I trust Tristan Hill to kind of develop as a guy to do that on the inside. Lodge, again, I think fits the profile of a Jacksonville Jaguars wide receiver. I think he's the kind of guy that they look for. So I think that makes sense. Ripien, again, I like his fit. I think he's fine behind Foles. That makes total sense. And then James Williams, I really like the I think he's an upgrade to maybe what TJ Yeldon was not too long ago for them. And so I really like James Williams a lot. He's a guy who's got an awesome story. He's a dude that you for sure root for. He's basically worked for everything that he's gotten to this point. He's improved so much. He's a fantastic pass catcher. And so he can make guys miss. He's not the most athletic guy in a straight line. He's not going to break off any 60-yard touchdowns or anything like that. But in terms of the third down back, he's going to give it his all. Who's going to be a really great asset in the passing games, especially when it comes to getting the ball in his hands out of the air. I like that for him. This is my second favorite one. I think that the second mock draft, even if you take Quinnen Williams off and you give him an edge rusher, that would have been that's my favorite one out of the three for Jacksonville. But this one's pretty good too. I think this one would be my second favorite.
Regardless of whatever anyone's favorite is, as well as the ones you guys put together over on the Draft Network, this is going to be a really fun draft coming up, a real important one for Jacksonville. Excited, very happy to have Trevor come on the show with me today to, you know, run this all down. Trevor, let us know what else you've got going on at the Draft Network, as well as, you know, plug away all the work that you do.
Of course, yeah. No, thedraftnetwork.com. The more you guys visit it, the happier person I am. If you guys don't follow me on Twitter, at Tampa Bay Trey, T-R-E. I'm doing all kinds of draft stuff, talking football, sending out memes. You know the drill. And then, yeah, we got a live draft show that we're doing at the Draft Network. All 3 days of the NFL draft, we're going to be live from Nashville. Hope you guys can tune in on that. We're going to be broadcasting live right on Twitter, so you can check us out on your phones, your tablets, whatever it is. Pop by, say hello. It's going to be a lot of fun. Yeah, no, thanks for having me, Zach. It was great to finally link up. I think this is the latest in the draft season we've ever done, like a podcast or something like that, but still glad to get it in with you, man.
Yeah, man, really glad that you were able to stop by. I'm sure we'll be doing this again at some point soon. And everyone, you know, if you're not subscribed to Locked On Jaguars yet, go ahead and make that happen. Anywhere you can find podcasts, you can find Locked On Jaguars. Keep subscribing, leaving those ratings and reviews. We just announced when our official co-host, you know, transfer is going to be happening. It'll be right after the draft. We'll be moving. Chris will be, unfortunately, departing. We'll have Tony Wiggins coming on the Monday after the draft. We're really excited about that. We'll fill you in more with more news with that, as well as more content as the week goes on. We'll catch up with you guys next time.